Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. I've traveled, I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidel. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air. I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I am Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Well, thank you so much, Audrey. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Blog Talk Radio Network and the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We want to thank Johnny Cash again for that trip across the United States that sets down in 90 cities and states throughout our wonderful nation. And in fact, I was the past 2 weeks in some of those places that he mentioned, for example, Jellicoe, Tennessee. As most of you realize, I've been away on the road, but that doesn't stop our show. We've had two great guests out on the road. I hope you enjoyed both Randy Stone and Jim Taylor. I thought Jim Taylor last week was just so interesting in terms of his doctoral dissertation research he's doing on the history of the gun, its value and meaning to people, and he's still looking for people who are willing to fill out his survey and be part of his study. And I put some contact information for Jim on the Blog Talk Radio Jumble Justice Show site. So if you'd like to be part of Jim's study, you can certainly go there under the show notes over on the right side. Click on that, and you'll see something there about Jim Taylor. And then you can get contact information and email him, and he'll send you his survey. It's not that long to complete. You'll be able to tell from the survey questions. It's a very interesting study that he's involved in, and it should be fun to see what his results are. But here we are again with another edition of Blog Talk Radio. Emily and Mike, glad to see you in here tonight. Emily and Mike were not on the road with us, but they're always supporting us one way or the other, and they've got some work to do tonight. We've got a couple technical things to do here where we're transferring video to audio and back to another audio transmission, so we'll see how that works tonight. We might be going to back to some old techniques that we used when Blog Talk Radio first started. But I think what will happen is, I've told people in the past that the Blog Talk Radio is going to do this major upgrade. It's going to start in September. It's going to be just absolutely exciting. I think we'll be able to put audio and video on there, even for you to play off of the site. We'll have to wait and see what happens. I've seen some samples of the new web pages and what they look like. And I think you're going to be very pleased when you see that. Well, let me say something about the show. As I say every week, our purpose is to discuss the news, issues, events, and developments in this always difficult and sometimes humorous field of criminal justice. So goodness knows we need the humor sometimes to keep our sanity, don't we? Our show is dedicated to all those energetic and tireless police, courts, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the nation and throughout the world. We look inside criminal justice on this show and as professionals and their practice, and as we're fond of saying, as someone has said, someone, I can't recall who, we're sort of the NPR of criminal justice, National Public Radio, and I consider that somewhat of a compliment. Blog Talk Radio is a leading-edge technology, and everybody that has anything to say to anyone, even if it's as simple as having a conversation regularly, you can get a Blog Talk Radio show and broadcast up to 14 to 17 hours a week. I'm not sure what it is. It may even be more than that now. And Alan Levy is the CEO of Blog Talk Radio, and he's the genius behind this medium. And the network is now up to more than 1,700 different shows. And if you go to the general Blog Talk Radio site, just blogtalkradio.com, you'll see some of the featured shows there. You're certainly going to recognize some of the names of people, of entertainers, politicians, celebrities who have Blog Talk Radio shows. And you can do it yourself. So anybody, any interest group, any organization can have their own show. In fact, I talked with someone today. For the first time, I've heard somebody say, I haven't looked lately on Blog Talk Radio, but he's talking about maybe having his university have a radio show on the Blog Talk Radio network, and that would be outstanding because the cost is what? To broadcast live in streaming audio to an unlimited number of listeners worldwide, the cost is absolutely nothing. And then the show is archived within 5 minutes after it plays, and it will be on their archive for 5 weeks, but of course you can download the show to an MP3 player, to computer, and play it on Windows Media Player or whatever. So it's a great opportunity for anybody that has anything to do and say. And I think if you go back far enough, I don't know when I first jumped up on the Internet, I think it was 1991 or something, and it was a Netscape browser, if anybody could. No, it was before that. It was one of the University of Illinois used, Mosaic, I think was it. What it was called, but this is what the net was made for, to share information like that. So I would encourage you to get your own show, as I'm fond of saying. Tonight what we're going to do is something unusual, I think, out of the ordinary. We're going to do the usual commentary on the news and criminal justice news, and of course we'll always have listener call-ins for those who choose to do that. Some weeks we do, some weeks we don't. But we encourage that. But tonight what I'm going to do is start the first of a two-part series. I'm going to take a look again at this issue of illegal immigration and border security, since it just doesn't seem to die. The news is full of stories this past week. We'll comment on a few of those. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to look at the 10 Republican candidates who've declared, well, actually 9 who've declared for the presidency. And what I did a little content analysis of their website in terms of what they say about illegal immigration, stopping illegal immigration and border security for the United States, which, of course, is, in fact, homeland security, as you'll hear later on tonight. And what I did, I came up with 20 factors that I looked for that were important kinds of things. For example, the issue of amnesty, whether they supported or did not support amnesty, whether they supported a fence, and 18 others. And then I put this all on a spreadsheet and did a little analysis of this data, not too much, not over analysis for sure. And I think if you're interested in what these candidates believe, these 9 Republican candidates who've declared, and then I included Fred Thompson. Is he declared or not declared? It's kind of hard to figure out what that guy's all about at this point, but he still is popular in the polls, although he hasn't declared. And I did an analysis of all that data to see kind of where they stood as a group on the issue of illegal immigration. So what I'd like to do next week is do exactly the same thing for all of the Democratic presidential candidates who are running. And I took a little sneak peek at some of those ahead of time because I finished the Republican work, and it's surprising who takes a really strong stance sometimes when you don't suspect it. But when you look at their websites, I did all this data analysis from their websites, not from news stories, not from YouTube clips and that type of thing, but what they put on their website. And, of course, what's on there doesn't necessarily mean, if it's not on there, it doesn't necessarily mean they don't believe it or support it or against it. It just means that their staff and they as the people in charge of their website, haven't taken issue with that, and they haven't told the public what they believe on that particular issue, at least in terms of their website. So I thought that was kind of interesting kind of data. I've done a lot of content analysis studies of websites going way back into the mid-1990s, and boy, have they improved, right? I mean, they talk to you, they have video, they almost reach out and grab you sometimes. So I thought that might be an interesting show tonight, and it is the month of August, and most all the executives and supervisors and managers and hot people who have seniority in the organization, they're on vacation in August, so some of those we won't bother, at least for a couple weeks. But I think that would be interesting, and maybe to some of you who are listening, it might even be helpful to see how these candidates at least stand on this particular issue. Well, here's what you do as a listener or a caller. You listen on your computer with Windows Media Player, or you can call in by phone, cell phone, landline, Skype, whatever service you use. You can hear the whole show on your phone, so you actually don't even need your computer. And the number you call in at is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And what happens is I can hold five calls at one time, so I can actually talk to four people at the same time, and we can have a conversation. And you show up on my switchboard as a little microphone with an X on it, and then when I click off your red X, then I actually see you on the, or I can talk to you on the phone. So that's how the whole show goes. One of the things we do traditionally on this show, if you haven't listened before, is Audrey, who is British and who happens to be a blonde, has been a collector of blonde jokes since she was a small girl, actually. And so she's accumulated hundreds and hundreds of these blonde jokes. And she told me tonight she had a surprise for me. She's done that a couple of times before. But Audrey, are you set with this joke? I mean, can you do it? You're saying yes? And there's something I'm going to be surprised about? Okay, let's hear it. Here we go.
Professor Haley, tonight we break precedent and have a blonde guy joke. I hope our listeners will like this one. A blonde guy gets home early from work and hears strange noises coming from the bedroom. He rushes upstairs to find his wife naked on the bed, sweating and panting. "What's up?" he says. "I'm having a heart attack," cries the woman. He rushes downstairs to grab the phone, but just as he's dialing, his four-year-old son comes up and says, "Daddy, Daddy, Uncle Ted is hiding in your closet, and he's got no clothes on." The guy slams the phone down and storms upstairs into the bedroom, past his screaming wife, and rips open the wardrobe door. Sure enough, here is his brother, totally naked, cowering on the closet floor. "You rotten son of a gun," says the husband, "my wife is having a heart attack, and you are running around naked scaring the kids."
Okay, that's a pretty good one. All right. Thank you, Audrey. I think that still passes the test here in terms of airing a joke like that before a general audience. I think we can do it. There are things that are unsaid that are okay. That's a good joke, but we'll go back to blonde women next week. Sure? Okay, good. I'm looking forward to that. Well, let's take a look at some of the news in criminal justice news, and there's some interesting things going on. This one isn't criminal justice news, but it's often something I've thought about. Over the years, I spent a lot of time outside running and biking, and if you're doing long runs of 2 or 3 hours or bike rides of 5 or 6 or more, you're bound to run into a storm now and then, that's for sure, correct? If you've done that, you know what I'm talking about. But anyway, here's a man in Pennsylvania, Hamlin, Pennsylvania, I can't believe it. Can lightning strike twice in the same place? Well, it did for this man named Don Frick. Can you believe that? This guy was in... what was he doing? Frick says he survived his second lightning strike Friday, 27 years to the day of his first, and he emerged a bit shaken with only a burned zipper and a hole in the back pocket of his jeans. In fact, if you go to the news site here, Canoe News site, you'll actually see the slit in his jeans that the lightning made. And he says, I'm lucky I'm alive, he says, in a phone interview last Sunday night. He said, Frick was attending a festival when a storm came up quickly. He and six others sought refuge in a shed shortly before the lightning struck the ground nearby. The strike sent a shock through Frick and four others. The 68-year-old man says, it put me up against the wall. When I came to and realized I was alive, the first thing that came to my mind was that I'm pretty lucky. None of the others were seriously injured. 27 years ago to the day, he was a tractor-trailer truck driver, and lightning struck the antenna on his truck, leaving him severely injured with a left side injury that bothered him for weeks or perhaps even months. But anyway, you can get hit by lightning twice, and I forget, I know that's on the Internet, probably take about 2 seconds to find it, but it's surprising how many people have been struck by lightning twice. That is indeed amazing. Here's kind of an interesting one. You might have even seen this chase on television, but this past week in Phoenix, there was a guy who's involved in a police chase. Yeah, I guess we see enough of those on television. On Tuesday, he surprised authorities when he stopped at a convenience store to buy cigarettes before he resumed the pursuit. I guess when you need a cigarette, you need a smoke, you really need one. So that's exactly what happened Tuesday in Phoenix when authorities chased a suspected bank robber. The suspect weaved his way through neighborhoods and made a couple of close calls with cars on the road. And then an undercover police officer in a truck ran into the suspect trying to spin him out. Then in the middle of his chase, what's he do? He pulls up to a pit stop at a convenience store. He runs inside and he buys some smokes. The clerk says, well, you know, it really did seem like he was in a hurry, but he did pay for the pack and he left. Nice guy. He could have stolen it. I guess what would make the difference if they're chasing you for bank robbery? But anyway, here's a bank robber with a conscience. She says, I gave him the cigarettes and he gave me $20. And then he left. Boy, they're not that expensive, are they? Well, maybe they are nowadays. For my smoking friends, I like to tell them I can remember years ago that when you're on board ship, when I was in the Marine Corps, you could buy things in the ship stores, all Navy personnel, and I'm sure Army personnel who travel by ship know that too. But a pack of cigarettes used to cost 11 cents in the ship store. I don't think it's quite that cheap right now. Police eventually deployed one of those spike strips, which blew out the suspect's tires, and then they took him into custody. But isn't that incredible? About 3 weeks ago, I think I did a little preview of our book, the book that I co-authored with five other authors. And the book is called Strange But Real, Perspectives on Odd Issues in Criminal Justice, always available on Lulu.com, and I think very shortly on Amazon.com at a very reasonable price. But it's a book that's full of some really odd things. And one of the issues in there that one of our authors, Ron Edwards, wrote about was should taxpayers pay for the sex change of prison inmates? And actually, this is going on in the state of Idaho right now, and I'll just hit some of the highlight points about this. A family values organization, of course, is very upset about this, that taxpayers must pay for a sex change treatment for a state prison inmate. But according to the press, Randall Gamut demanded a name change to Jennifer Spencer while he was in prison, and he wanted other treatments as well. He's in jail for possession of a stolen car and escape. Can't imagine somebody going to prison for possession of a stolen car, at least not in the communities I've lived in. That's usually probation. But anyway, he believes, or she believes, she is a woman trapped in a man's body, according to the report. And he actually castrated herself, she did, using a disposable razor blade in a prison cell. Ouch. When state prison physicians declined to provide estrogen. So here he is, or here she is, trapped in a man's body, and then she performs a castration. The inmate then he filed a suit against the Idaho Department of Correction, alleging a violation of constitutional rights for that refusal. Brian Fisher, the executive director of the Idaho Values Alliance, called it judicial activism at its worst. He says Judge Williams has taken it upon himself to normalize transgenderism. and he's forcing Idaho taxpayers to subsidize this particular gender identity, resolving this gender identity disorder. Kind of an interesting issue. I mean, should we in fact be paying for that? I mean, what else should we pay for prison inmates? That may be a little remote. So this inmate is obviously severely conflicted, but he is a male in every single cell of his body. Well, he says he's not. A spokesman for the state prison system told the press, "We're considering the ruling whether or not we have to do this and go forward, and whether we're going to, is there going to be any kind of appeal of the decision, but who knows. But anyway, Idaho taxpayers are now going to probably have to pay for that if there's no other further court order. It's interesting, it said state officials said the inmate who was in prison from 2000 to 2003, really, for stealing a car? I can't believe that. Things must be, they must be tough in Idaho. Before revealing the demands for treatment, so he was in 3 years before he decided to do this, she did, was not found by prison, he was not found by prison physicians to have a gender identity disorder, so it was unethical to prescribe any necessary drug, and that's what the physicians physician said. So as we thought in the book Strange But Real, we were on track of some things that were truly unusual. Here's something that's actually going on that was talked about in that particular book. Right on target for our subject tonight on illegal immigration and border security, here's the story which I think you've probably seen out of New Haven, Connecticut. And what this one says is, as many U.S. cities and states are arresting illegal immigrants in raids and they toughen laws against them, New Haven, Connecticut is offering to validate them under a controversial first-in-the-nation ID card program. This is the first city in the nation that's actually going to issue ID cards to illegal immigrants. They'll offer them to the immigrants, municipal identification cards that will allow them to access city services such as libraries, bank accounts, et cetera, et cetera. Supporters say the cards will improve public safety and give undocumented workers protections now afforded legal residents. And the argument there is always what? That, if I'm an illegal immigrant and I'm in trouble in my neighborhood, I've been the victim of a crime or something, I can't call the police because I'm afraid that the police will turn me in as an illegal immigrant. I'm not sure. I don't think that's held up in every study, but that's the line, so to speak, in most of the major cities, I think, such as L.A., and Miami and other places, but New Haven they voted this in 25-1. Their city commission officials, supporters said the cards will unleash a flood of illegal immigrants straining, or excuse me, critics would say it will unleash a flood of illegal immigration coming into their city, and it's kind of interesting. Backers and detractors alike say the program appears to fill a vacuum after Congress didn't do anything. Remember the big comprehensive immigration reform bill that went down in defeat? And then the next day we had a national poll, a credible national poll, that said that only 13% of the American population supported that immigration bill. So I don't know if our politicians get the word or not, but that sounds like an issue that somebody ought to be taking a stand on, and we'll be getting to that tonight. The woman, or Kika Matos, I'm not sure if Kika is a woman or man, who administers the program for New Haven, said undocumented workers are often targeted by thieves, often by other undocumented workers, and robbed because they carry cash as a result of not being able to open a bank account. Part of the reason they can't open bank accounts is because they don't have forms of identification. She said the two banks have already signed on. They're going to give them these cards, and these cards will be like debit cards, and they estimate that 3,000 to 5,000 illegal immigrants live in the city of 124,000. Many are from Mexico, Ecuador, and Guatemala. By the way, did you see this week, I think it was New York Times story this morning, where Mexican officials are coming to the United States to find out how we deal with illegal immigrants so that they can use some of those policies or those ideas, if they like them, on their southern border. I thought that was a bit much. I think if there was a day when we should have been out of the office, that might have been one, because I don't think we get a lot of help from the Mexican government on the illegal immigrant issue. But that's kind of interesting. Yale University Law School helped them figure all this out, and they volunteered their legal services. Several immigrants' rights groups also helped build support for this. Opponents hope to rally the public against it, says Southern Connecticut Citizens for Immigration Reform. They say the ID card will change the entire country as we know it, and is organizing a protest at City Hall for next Tuesday. There are millions of illegal aliens right around us that when these ID cards are available to them, they will rush to them and get some identification that will allow them to go to other cities, and that will be a problem. There's more to the story. North Carolina-based Americans for Legal Immigration has circulated a flyer in 40 states urging illegal workers to move to New Haven. He says maybe New Haven needs to learn if they want illegals, they'll get the illegals. His flyer's in Spanish and English, and it says, come to New Haven, Connecticut for sanctuary. Bring your friends and family members quickly. Officials at several other cities, New York and San Francisco, have expressed interest in possibly starting this program. The new ID, Matos says, does not easily identify a person as illegal immigrant. Oh, that's good. This is the last, we wouldn't want to do that. This is the last thing that they want to have happen. The card was created with several features to appeal to all residents, including a debit component and access to city services such as parks and whatever. They interview one woman here, Fatima, who's an illegal immigrant from Mexico, and she says she's very eager to apply for this card. She says this will help me because it's a way I can be in the country and people can get to know me. And she says that when she crossed the border, she lost her papers. She lost her papers. I think I've heard that before when I was down on the border a couple years ago. It must be hard to keep track of those legal papers. And, of course, the city that's stepped out first on this was Hazleton, Pennsylvania. And you probably heard that this past week that a United States judge on Thursday struck down as unconstitutional a local law designed to crack down on illegal immigration, dealing a blow to similar laws passed by dozens of towns and cities across the country. U.S. District Judge James Munley wrote a very long 206-page opinion about Hazleton, Pennsylvania, 100 miles north of Philadelphia, and said they were not allowed to implement a law that would fine businesses that hire illegal immigrants and penalize landlords who rent rooms to them. Federal law prohibits Hazleton, he says, from enforcing any of the provisions of its ordinances. Munley wrote in a 206-page opinion, the city of 30,000 blames a recent rise in illegal immigration for boosting crime and overburdening social services. The law was passed in July of 2006, but was not implemented because of a court injunction that stopped this. And most of you know Farmers Branch, Texas, has had the same, essentially the same issue. Now, about a third of the city's residents are immigrants from Central America, and around a quarter of the immigrant population is believed to be undocumented. So you're talking about here the city of 30,000, one-fourth are illegal now. Of the residents of a third that are immigrants from outside the United States. The mayor, Lou Barletta, who you've probably seen on television numerous times, said the city would like to appeal the decision. But I think if you got something, that kind of proportion, that many illegals, Michelle Malkin's book title, Invasion, is not too far off, is it? But dozens of towns and cities have modeled their immigration programs after that. Now, I thought what I'd do before I go through some of these presidential candidates' views on the Republican side concerning illegal immigration is to take a look at some data that I've had in my hands for a couple days, and I've been tracking this issue for probably six or seven years, and want to do some more serious writing about it. But this is data from the INS and FBI statistical report on undocumented immigrants. There are statistics here relative to crime and births that I absolutely could not believe, and I've read most of the books on this subject in at least over the last 4 or 5 years, and the most recent one, in fact, I did a book review for you on the radio show, Pat Buchanan's State of Emergency, regardless of your politics, That is the definitive work, I think, at the moment on the subject. But just listen to this. 95% of the warrants in Los Angeles are for illegal aliens, criminal warrants. We're talking about crime. 83% of the warrants for murder in Phoenix, Arizona are for illegal aliens. 86% of warrants for murder in Albuquerque, New Mexico are for illegal aliens. 75% of those on the most wanted list in Los Angeles, Phoenix, Albuquerque are illegal aliens. 24% of all inmates in California detention centers are Mexican nationals who are here illegally. That's just Mexico. 40.1% of all inmates in Arizona detention centers are Mexican nationals that are here illegally. Does it sound like the border is porous? 29% of convicted illegal alien felons fill our state and federal prisons at the cost of $1.5 billion annually. You know, we're actually doing things. We're actually providing in Spanish a high school education for Mexican immigrants in some federal prisons. Corrections Corporation of America is actually contracted with the federal government, and they're actually saying that if we train some of these illegal criminal aliens and give them a high school diploma, that they'll go back to Mexico. I hope we deliver them back, because when we just let them out the door, they don't go back, and that they'll go back and stay in Mexico and go to work. Yeah. 53% plus of all investigated burglaries reported in California, New Mexico, Nevada, Arizona, Texas are perpetrated by illegal aliens. Can you believe that? 53%. And you know, for a burglar, they only get caught about once every, 198 or every 200 times. So this is a serious issue. These statistics are incredible. By the way, I have put these on the Blog Talk Radio, Jumbo Justice Radio site, and they're over on the left-hand column, and it'll say something like illegal alien contributions to the U.S. So you could take a look at that and print it out yourself and read it. 50% of all gang members in L.A. are illegal aliens. 71% plus of all apprehended cars stolen in Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada, and California were stolen by illegal aliens. I can't believe that. Or transport coyotes. 7 out of 10 stolen cars. I mean, it just knocks me out. 47% of the cited stop drivers in California who have no license, no insurance, and no registration are illegal aliens. 63% of stop drivers in Arizona have no license and no insurance and no registration for the vehicle. And see, you see, the police have data on this, but in some cities they can collect all the data they want, but they're not allowed to do anything about it. 300,000 plus illegal aliens in Los Angeles County are living in garages. Now, I don't know how we get that kind of census, but it's U.S. government data. How about this? 14 of 31 TV stations in Los Angeles County are Spanish only. 15 out of 24 stations in Albuquerque are Spanish only. 17 radio stations in Los Angeles are Spanish only. I'm not going to go on, but it goes on and talks about schools. And I was going to go through again tonight a little review for you, an up-to-date review on immigrationcounters.com. If you haven't had a chance to look at that site, it's immigrationcounters.com. And it's changing as you're watching it in terms of cost of illegal aliens, how many are in school, the anchor babies, the money being wired to both Mexico and Latin America and South America. We're talking about billions and billions of dollars. So anyway, this idea that they're contributing to our society and spending the money here, you probably ought to bag that idea if you look at the data on immigration. 43% of all food stamps are issued to illegal aliens. Did you know that? 41% of all unemployment checks in the U.S. go to illegal aliens. 58% of all welfare payments in the U.S. are issued to illegal aliens. I simply did not know that. So those are things that you probably ought to take a look at. I have a book review I want to talk about a little bit later on if we have time. But I think what I want to do is get right to the heart of our show tonight and talk about some of the things that are going on relative to these presidential candidates. And the ones that have declared, we have 9 that have declared on the Republican side. And I'll just tick off those names real quick. It's Rudy Giuliani, Mike Huckabee, Duncan Hunter, John McCain, Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, Tom Tancredo, Fred Thompson, Tommy Thompson and Sam Brownback. And, of course, Fred Thompson is one that has not fully declared, but folks are saying that he's probably going to get into it. And here's what I took a look at. The issues that I tried to pick off of their own campaign websites in terms of figuring out how they stood on these particular issues. One, are they in favor of local law enforcement? That means state, county, municipal, township law enforcement enforcing any kind of immigration laws. That was one. How many are for securing the borders, like first or immediately? That was another one. How many oppose amnesty for the illegals that are here now? And, of course, you know the bill that went that died in the Senate was a bill that, call it what you like, but it provided a path to citizenship even for some who had committed criminal violations, more than one criminal violations, although the public thought that wasn't true. How about the ones that want to enforce the current law? They take a stand, look, we don't need any legislation. All we need to do is enforce the laws that we have. We're not doing a very good job of it. How many want to deport the illegal aliens? I bet you can make a guess about that in terms of public opinion, but you might be surprised who it. How many want to put all these people in line and don't give the ones in the United States any type of precedent, even if they've been here 7, 8, 10, 11, 20 years and even have family? In other words, they want them to go to the end of the line and start over. How many want to eliminate the magnets that draw them here, like some of those social services that I just went over in that particular list? You'd be surprised how many of our Republican candidates are in favor of eliminating these magnets. And, of course, Pat Buchanan, in the last chapter, when he draws up a plan, that's one of the things that he was for, that if we eliminate the incentives, things that draw them here, we'll be all right. How many of them want to make loyalty to the United States a key issue? That's an important one also. And I'll be reading something that Teddy Roosevelt said a long time ago, that a quote that perhaps you read. How many want a real swift or sure employer identification system? In other words, an ID, a secure ID that cannot be duplicated or counterfeited, and they want all employers to verify ID. How many want to restrict immigration under reform to skilled immigrants? Some are clearly saying we have enough laborers and unskilled workers in the United States. We don't need any more. How many want to build a fence? How many want to prosecute alien criminals now instead of just getting them out of here? Why not arrest them and send them to prison? Be surprised how few there are. Can I tell you ahead of time? There's one. Of all these candidates, at least in terms of what their website says, and they may believe this, but they or their staff have not thought it's important enough to put that on the website. How many are concerned about disease? That's something that you hear very little about, but I guess in some of these communities, they do come in and these diseases are near rampant in some communities. How many want to punish employers for employing illegal immigrants? How many want to share agency information? See, a lot of this, if you remember Dr. Charles Williams, it was on our show several weeks ago. He wrote his doctoral dissertation on sort of a model program about agency sharing information. They don't do that a lot now. And how many want to make sure that this information could be shared? And in fact, in some circumstances, it's probably unlawful to share this information. In fact, I know it is. How many want to stop all welfare benefits and government services to illegal immigrants? I mean all. They're talking about the children. They're talking about to everybody. How many want to stop the anchor baby or the birthright citizenship idea? Most people realize that if you come here illegal in the United States and then you, in fact, have a child, the child is automatically a citizen of the United States based on U.S. law. And there's been talk about taking that away, but you don't hear many people talk about it. How many want more Border Patrol agents? That is something that the Bush administration has done. They've beefed up the Border Patrol. In fact, if you want to work on the Border Patrol, they're very selective, but I think you could be there by Saturday if you want to do that, because they certainly need Border Patrol agents. Now, the last one, number 20, it's a lot of data, I know. The last one I looked at was how many want to reduce the number of illegal immigrants that are coming into the United States. In other words, maybe we have enough immigrants. Maybe we ought to, you've heard people say it, we should stop immigration altogether. Some aren't saying that. But we should stop immigration altogether and sort of get a hold on this thing and then figure out how we're going to manage the whole immigration process again. But there are some that are very interested in reducing these presidential candidates, the number of legal immigrants. In fact, one of them says, under the current law, we could be taking in almost no time 60 million, and he's recommended we cut that back to like 250,000. Now, you're going to get Bill Gates and some of these other people that want computer programmers and, you know, every other type of large corporate industry that depends on illegal immigration for laborers. I'm not saying Gates does. He probably gets legal ones because he pays well. But they want to, in fact, we're talking about legal immigrants too here. They want to bring in as many as they can because they can. They come in with the talent. And so that's an issue. But one of the guys I thought that was most interesting in all of this, and I'm gonna try and see if this works, and we're going to go back to an old technology we tried before where we hold the phone up to the speaker. But Duncan Hunter, when you talk about the issue of the fence, the congressman from California, he knows what he's talking about. He's a presidential candidate. He was the sponsor and author of two fence bills. They built the fence in Southern California, and I think if this the sound comes through okay, you're going to be surprised about some of the results. So let's see if this actually if this would actually work.
I'm Congressman Duncan Hunter, running for the presidency of the United States, and I want to tell you about the border fence. You know, in the 1980s, the San Diego-Tijuana border was out of control, and through that number one smuggler's corridor in America, that area between San Diego, California, and Tijuana, Mexico, most of the smuggling of narcotics and people took place. Hundreds of thousands of people, tons of narcotics were pushed through by the smugglers. It was a no man's land. We had armed gangs that roamed the border at night. They robbed, sometimes they beat and raped the illegal aliens coming through. It was terrible. It was so bad that we actually had a plainclothes police force from San Diego that would hang around the border and wait to be attacked by the border gangs, and then they would pull their guns, and there would be either a shootout or a series of arrests. And because of that no man's land, because of that massive smuggling, I built the border fence. First, we built a steel fence using Desert Storm-type landing nets, big steel planks that we welded with using Army Reservist welders to big steel poles, and we built that first fence across the San Diego-Tijuana border. You know, that stopped the drive-through drug people. The people were bringing through lots of cocaine and marijuana in vans. It also stopped a lot of the vehicle-borne illegal alien smugglers. But we wanted to do better. And because of that, I wrote the law that was passed in 1996 that mandated a triple fence across the San Diego-Tijuana corridor. That means you would have a fence on the border, then a border patrol road, then a second fence, then another border patrol road, and yet a third fence. That would slow down and stop the smugglers and allow the border patrol entry. It was so effective, we never had to build that third layer. We have stopped and decreased by more than 90% the smuggling of people and narcotics across that number one smuggler's corridor between San Diego and Tijuana. You know something else? When we built the border fence, the crime rate in the city of San Diego, just a little to the north, dropped by FBI statistics by 53%. Well, this year, I wrote the bill that extends the San Diego border fence for 854 miles across the major smuggling routes of Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. 854 miles. It's mandated that fence be constructed. And you know that bill for the border fence passed the House by a very large margin. It passed the Senate by 80-19. President Bush signed it on October 26th. Now, you know, this is what the border looked like before we built the border fence in San Diego. This is what it looked like after we built the fence. The 854-mile extension of the San Diego border fence would bring that kind of stability to the entire border of the Southwest and would make America a lot more secure. Now, let me tell you, in my estimation, Border security is no longer simply an immigration issue. It's also a national security issue. And let me tell you why. In 2005, we caught 155,000 people coming across the border from Mexico who weren't citizens of Mexico. They came from virtually every country in the world, including 1,100 people from communist China and a few people from North Korea and Iran. Very simply, everybody in the world knows that the way you get into America illegally now is no longer coming through the airports because they've been blocked to illegal travel. If you want to get in illegally, you come across the land border between Mexico and the United States, and anybody with a few bucks can get to Mexico from any point in the world. Border enforcement is now a national security issue. So let's get back to the border fence. We passed it. The law that I wrote was passed and signed by the president last October. I picked up the phone and asked the Department of Homeland Security the other day how many miles of border fence they've done so far. So far, they've only completed 2 miles. It's time to build the border fence. And this is my commitment to you. If I'm elected president of the United States, I will finish the border fence, all 854 miles, in 6 months. It can be done very easily. You simply use multiple contractors starting at multiple points, and you do all the work in all the sections concurrently. We can do it. We're Americans. We know how to build fences. And you know something else? That will bring stability not just to our side of the border. It'll also bring stability to the south side of the border. You know something else? About 200 people, mostly illegal aliens, die of dehydration in the Arizona desert every summer. If we build that border fence, that's going to keep those smugglers from pushing those people across the line where they find themselves in 110-degree heat the next day and a number of them die. So there's a humanitarian aspect to building the border fence. I want you to join me in helping to build the border fence. Call up the Department of Homeland Security. Tell them that you want them to follow the law because it's the law that the fence shall be built. And once again, remember my commitment to you that I will complete the border fence in 6 months after taking the oath of office as President of the United States. Thanks for listening.
Well, I think if you go ahead and take a look at that, you can Google the site and just go to Duncan Hunter for President. And you'll go to his website. He has some very nice visuals on there, pictures of this fence that they actually built in California before and after type of pictures. But isn't that amazing that the San Diego crime rate almost immediately went down like 53%? And that certainly relates to that set of statistics that I read to you a little bit early about crime, and then you can get that off of the website also. So sounds like Duncan Hunter's a man knows what he talks about. He certainly can explain the issue a little better, I think, than President Bush does at times. But I wanted to read you one other thing before I kind of look at the analysis of this data. I'm not going to have time to go through everybody's particular page. But there's one here, Tom Tancredo's page, and Pat Buchanan cites this also. And perhaps you've heard this quote before. But here's something that Teddy Roosevelt said in 1907, and of course that was a big time for immigration into the United States. But I think it's apropos of some of the issues and things that we're thinking about today. But this is a direct quote of Teddy Roosevelt, who was an incredible person if you've not read much about him. In the first place, we should insist that if the immigrant who comes here in good faith becomes an American and assimilates himself to us, he shall be treated on an exact equality with everyone else, for it's an outrage to discriminate against any such man because of creed or birthplace or origin. But this is predicated upon the person's becoming in every facet an American, and nothing but an American. There can be no divided allegiance here. Any man who says he's an American, but something else also, isn't an American at all. We have room for but one flag, the American flag. We have room for but one language here, that's the English language. And we have room but one sole loyalty, and that is a loyalty to the American people. That was Teddy Roosevelt in 1907. While I still have time, let me take a look at the data here and kind of show you what this means. And remember, I looked at 20 different things, but if you look at allowing local enforcement, this is what they had on their website, or they did not have on their website in many, if not most, cases. Supporting the idea of local enforcement, local law enforcement enforcing immigration laws. And, you know, Sheriff Arpaio and Arizona and some places have passed laws like this. Out of all the 10 candidates that are running for president, only two were in support of that, of having local law enforcement, meaning state, county, municipal, enforce any kind of immigration laws, and that was Fred Thompson and Sam Brownback. Those who wanted to secure the border immediately. Now, this is, it was every one of them that I read, I won't read their names, on their website said that they wanted to secure the border. Essentially what they meant was as soon as possible or immediately. And oddly enough, Tom Tancredo and Tommy Thompson, who's, you know, famous for a lot of things, when he was governor of Wisconsin, didn't he take about 70% of the people off welfare and stopped all that Chicago welfare fraud, people going up into Wisconsin and getting welfare under about 4 or 5 or 10 or 20 different names. But 8 of the people wanted to secure the border immediately. Those who opposed amnesty were Mike Huckabee, Baptist preacher, I believe, John McCain, Ron Paul, Tom Tancredo, and Tommy Thompson. So you've got Brownback, Fred Thompson, Mitt Romney, Duncan Hunter, and Rudy Giuliani, who did not make a statement on their website about amnesty. Enforce the current law, only two said that that was good enough or something we should be doing. And that was Ron Paul and Tommy Thompson. Deport illegals, as you can imagine, I'll bet you could guess, not much support for that. Mike Huckabee, at least in terms of stating it, Mike Huckabee and Tommy Thompson were the only ones that said that. Take all the illegals that are here now and put them at the end of the line, no matter how long they've been here. One person was for that, and that was Tommy Thompson. Not Fred Thompson, Tommy. Eliminate all the magnets, you know, the social services, the welfare, the jobs, etc. One person stated that on their website, and that was Tom Tancredo. One language, still only two people, John McCain, Tom Tancredo. Demand a loyalty to the United States and demonstrate it in some way. Only one person was for that, and that was Tom Tancredo. He takes a hit on that numerous times, I think. Have a safe and secure, infallible ID and employee verification system. That was Giuliani, Mike Huckabee, Mitt Romney, and Sam Brownback. And look at those others that didn't even have a stand on that. Restrict immigration to skilled immigrants, people who have skills that we actually need here in the United States, and they're not talking about labor and field labor and that type of thing. That was Mike Huckabee and John McCain. Build a fence. Not many people in support of the fence. Of course, Duncan Hunter, as you heard, is. And but Mike Huckabee, Duncan Hunter, and Tommy Thompson on that issue of the fence. Prosecute illegal aliens that are here now before we would deport them or anything else. One person took a stand on that, at least dug all that out of the issues and made it prominent on their website. Only one person, and that was Mike Huckabee. In fact, you're going to be surprised as you go across here. He takes a pretty good stand. Concern for disease, only Mike Huckabee mentioned that we should be concerned about health issues relative to illegal immigration. Punish employers. Are you sitting down? I think you are, or lying down, or snoozing, but the punishment of employers for hiring illegal immigrants in terms of taking a stand on that and mentioning it on their website, only one person did that, and that was Sam Brownback. Share agency information, the only person that sorted through that's sort of a subtlety, an esoteric type of issue relative to that, but Sam Brownback, he was there, and he sorted it out, and he's the only one that stood for that. No welfare or government services, only Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul, MD, took a stand on that. Stop anchor babies and the birthright citizen issue. The only person that took a stand on that was Ron Paul. If you look at Ron Paul's website, if you haven't done it before, kind of an interesting character. The mainstream media, at least some of them, try to characterize him as sort of a kook. You know, he's been, I think, and then I think he's been part of the Libertarian Party and also Republican. Don't quote me on that, but he's consistent. He says on his website that he doesn't vote for anything in Congress that is not expressly mentioned in the Constitution that Congress is allowed to do. That's a novel idea nowadays, for sure. Add more Border Patrol agents. That was only Mike Huckabee and Sam Brownback that actually mentioned beefing up the Border Patrol. It's in process now. The last one was reduce the number of legal immigrants that are in the United States right now. And three of them stood out on that and made that a point. And that was Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, and Tom Tancredo. In other words, they're saying that we're sort of filled up right now, the glass is overflowing, and we need to sort of stop immigration or at least slow it substantially in order to get hold of that. So if you're doing a little count, there's a lot of ways you can analyze this data, but if you're doing a little count, now here's what it sort of comes up like. Eight of these 10 candidates support securing the border like immediately. Doesn't seem like it's the hardest thing to do, especially if you talk to Duncan Hunter. He's got some ideas about that fence, and he's proved that it works. Five oppose amnesty. These are the most frequent now in terms of support issues that we found on their website. It'll be interesting to compare and contrast that with the Democrats next week. But five opposing amnesty. Four take a stand on serious employment verification and ID type of system. So in other words, you can't get a job unless you can prove that you're here legally in the United States. Only three of these 10 candidates take a stand on building the fence. And I think I mentioned those. That's Huckabee, Duncan Hunter, and Tommy Thompson. Tommy Thompson is an interesting character. I actually own some land in Wisconsin, so I pay attention to Wisconsin. But he was a very good governor in that state, but he's almost negligible in terms of showing up in the polls. The other thing that got three markers was reduce the number of legal immigrants coming to the United States. And there were only three that took that stand, and I mentioned those. That was Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, and Tom Tancredo. Now, if any of these candidates are listening and they think that they're, they need to bring to prominence these particular points, then maybe they'll be altering their websites in the next few weeks, but I doubt that they're listening to us tonight. They're too busy. But I thought this was interesting to take a look at these 20 things, and then what I'll do next week is I'll come back and contrast this what we found out with the Democrats, and maybe I'll have somebody else call in and help me analyze this data next week also. But I thought you'd enjoy hearing that for the evening, and what we'll do is take another look at this next week and see how it goes. I had a book review here I wanted to talk about, but I think I'm going to save it. Robert Novak just came out with a brand new book, and it's published by Random House, and it's called Prince of Darkness, and it's his 50 years of reporting in Washington, D.C. And I was going to read you the book review that Thomas Sowell did, one of my favorite writers and commentators. I'm sure you've heard of Thomas Sowell. But I'll save that to next week since we're just about up to the end of time. So I hope you enjoyed this a little bit this week, and take a look at the show if you haven't heard the whole thing, or you can certainly get it on the archive. It'll be archived in about 5 or 10 minutes after the show is over. So next week it's the Democrats, and we'll see how they do on these 20 immigration issues that I've combed out of their websites of the Republicans. Well, Audrey, she's given us the signal that the showtime is over, and so we'll be closing tonight, and good night, and be careful, and keep on learning, and I'm sure we'll be seeing each other again.
We'll meet again. Don't know when, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Smiling folks that I know tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. Don't know where, don't know where.